Saludos, reto aceptadores. Los coge consejos. Ya aprendí, ya no me tienes que decir nada. Estamos aquí en el episodio número 21 del Reto Aceptado Podcast. Y
¿es el 21?
21, sí. Tú estabas con Alzheimer últimamente. Y estamos aquí con un guest bien especial. Voy ahora a cambiar a inglés para que podamos dialogar con el guest. Estamos con Jennifer Hopp. So, Jennifer.
Welcome.
Cue fake
audience. Yeah, cue. Come on, clap. Woo! We have an audience, so.
We have a live audience today, guys.
The laugh. Is that the laugh machine?
Yeah.
All right, so it's an honor to have Jennifer here. Jennifer Hopp, she was invited to our podcast. We spoke 2 months ago, I believe, and she has a lot of things going on in her personal and her business life. She has a venture capital firm called Hopp VC. Correct me if I'm wrong. And
ATO Ventures.
Very wrong.
Yeah, very wrong. So ATO Ventures, and she's invested in many startups, including local Puerto Rican startups, and she's now running a few new programs for local startup investment. So it's very exciting to have her here, and we're going to talk a little bit about that later. But first, I want to start explaining the topic for today's podcast and episode, which is investment. So my challenge with investment is that usually when I get money, I don't have too much money in my bank account, but when I get a little bit of money, I get really excited and I go to Best Buy and I buy either smart speakers or the first thing that comes to mind.
By the way, Fabian last week told me, Jerry, let's make a rule from now on. We're just going to start like going to Best Buy and saying like, for example, if it's my week, I'll say like, Fabian, go into Best Buy and grab whatever you can and I'll buy it. That's what he suggested. So that
red flag.
Start doing.
This is not good.
So investment red flags all the way. And I'm conscious of that. So I'm seeking wisdom and knowledge from the people who have been in this space for a while now. And I mean, this is basically my challenge for my whole life. And now I'm trying to see how I can better those practices and kind of like go from there. So before starting the conversation, I want to give a basic definition I found here from Google, Wikipedia. I know it's not the best source, but basically the definition here says that to invest is to allocate money in the expectation of some benefit in the future. And then it specifies that in finance, it is the benefit from an investment is called a return. So there it kind of like presents two very important concepts, which is investment. So put money into something and then get return out of that investment. So maybe let's start off from there. So me as a person that's starting out his professional life and is kind of like figuring out how to start investing in a smart way. How do you think we could start investing in smarter ways than just buying the latest smartphone, the latest iPhone?
Yeah, that's not an investment.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can give you just a little bit of background in terms of how I started investing.
Sure, I would love.
Because that may give a little bit of color and as well as perspective. It's always good to understand where people are coming from.
Yeah.
And so you can then take it with a grain of salt, right?
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of understanding my point of view. So I grew up and did not have a lot of money in my family. We were very poor. So very quickly we're jumping into this. It's not something I normally talk about.
We're getting the exclusive.
You're getting the exclusive.
Yes.
I think I've only said this one other time and definitely not publicly, but I was a welfare kid and we just didn't have any money at all. And so I had to work. I started working very, very young and it was good because I actually enjoyed it. And then the reason I bring this up is because I was the opposite problem that you have. I hoarded all the money that I made.
Oh, interesting.
So I would make money and then I would spend what I needed to on food and clothes and school fees and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And then I would save all of it. And that carried out into my adult life as well. So I started investing in college. So fast forward, I went to Oxford for a while but couldn't work. So I had been working my whole life and had to pay my way through school. But when I got to Oxford as a U.S. citizen, I couldn't work. So I took the scholarship and the grant and the loan and the everything that I had and put it in the stock market. So that's when I started investing. And it went well. I made a lot of money in the stock market and I ended up graduating early. So I had extra money and put it in a fund, right?
Okay.
An early stage tech fund. And I'm fast forwarding through all this because people have heard this story before. But where I'm getting at is my entire adult life, I just didn't spend any money. Like I never
so it's
went
a complete
out.
Opposite,
I never went out to eat. I never went on a vacation. I never bought anything. Like I really just was the thriftiest person. I knew where every penny was, and I invested every cent.
Okay.
Right. So it was a complete opposite. So it's easy for me to give you like, oh, you should do this, but you should understand that that was my mentality from the time I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's because of the way I grew up. Right. So.
Yeah.
I was all about make as much money as you can, as fast as you can.
Save up. You never know.
Save it. Invest it. It was just all about hoarding the money.
Yeah.
Now I'm a little more relaxed with it. But for me, it worked, right? I was able to do a lot of things at a very early age that other people aren't able to do, coming from having no money and then not spending a dime. Like, so I was figuring out how I could invest it from a very young age.
Okay.
So that's the background.
Thank you for the backstory.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I would tell you when I tell you, just don't buy anything. It's easy for me to say because that's just the way I am. And it's carried into even now. Now, you know, fortunately, I've been very blessed in the way things have gone with investing. And I could probably buy a lot of stuff, but I don't like stuff. Like, I just don't like, I don't like
material
things. Yeah, I'd rather do experiences or, you know, have fun in that way. And I'm just now starting to travel. But, like, if you come to, like, my home, like, I don't have stuff around. Like, I just don't buy a lot of things.
It's just what you
things.
Need.
Yeah, it's just kind of what I need. And
would you consider yourself a minimalist?
You know, it's interesting because that's become a popular thing now. So now minimalist means like people that like try to not own anything. So I don't know if
people
I would.
People that live in vans.
Exactly. Van life. So maybe I would have used that word before it became like there's actually a definition
a trend,
of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, it's more of, I don't like clutter. I don't collect objects. I'd rather just take a picture, right, than have the thing.
Yeah.
Because it's about a memory for me.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's something, yeah. So what I'm seeing is that it's interesting to see your perspective because it's also tied into personality.
Yeah.
So it's what things do you value.
Yep.
Which is what you will invest in eventually.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would say, so I'm I was extreme. And I wanted to say, don't ever buy anything for yourself because I think that happiness is important. And if that's what makes you happy, you definitely need
to find
a balance. But the more money you can put away and invest, the better. And I'd say, you know, you have to look at your time horizon.
Mm.
Ironically, I'm very risk-taking now with my investing strategies.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was younger, I was very calculated and not as risk-taking. Now, if you think about it from an economy perspective, and if you're talking to a financial advisor, they'll tell you when you're young, you can be super risky. When you get older,
you need to be more conservative. Yeah.
But I feel like it's changed for me because when I was young, and I've now told you my background, I was fearful of not having enough money.
Mm.
So I was very conservative, I hoarded it, and I was careful about how I invested. Now I've gone through and I've seen the ups and the downs of the markets and I win and I lose. And now I'm not worried about it anymore. I think I'm like, worst case scenario, you lose it all and you just make it again. Right? Because now I see that it's possible.
If you knew what you know now back then, would you have done it differently? Or do you think like, you know?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm... You know, you always, with more knowledge, you always make more different decisions, right? That's
right.
Why we change and grow. So I'm sure I would have done things differently, but I mean, I was a kid too, right? So
if you saw someone like in your, like in a similar situation as yourself, like right now, like, hey, you see someone young.
What would I tell them?
Right.
You know, I would tell them probably to do very similarly to what I did because it's kind of like until you amass enough wealth, it's good to be conservative, in my opinion. And the reason I say that is it's kind of the same philosophy as gambling. Okay, so this is an interesting story. This has never come up before, so you guys are getting an exclusive.
All the exclusive right here.
So here's another story for you. So when I was 18, I think our first winter break, I went to school at UC Berkeley first, and then I did my last, then I transferred to Oxford and then came back to UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
But so I was at UC Berkeley. It was my first year there. It was Thanksgiving break. So it was around this time, like many years ago. We won't talk about how many because I can't even calculate it that fast.
Months ago.
Yeah. Anyway. So we're going to over to Reno, right? Mm. So it's a driving distance, right? You go to Tahoe, you ski, and then you gamble.
Yeah.
So we're driving all the way over. Everyone's partying in the car. I'm in the back seat reading a statistics book on how to play blackjack.
Oh,
so I,
you know,
for
three
and a half hours, I'm studying how to play blackjack and doing the statistics, right? So we get there and I won all weekend long, right?
Oh my God.
So I won a ton of money playing blackjack because I learned the rules.
Yeah.
I understand stats and I'm really good at counting cards. But the point is, my philosophy was, I'm only going to take $20, whatever I feel comfortable losing. Like, that entertainment for me was worth $20. So I would use $20, I'd wait till I doubled it, I'd put the original $20 back in my pocket, and then I'd play
with
that $20. So I knew no matter what, I wasn't going to lose money.
You would only play with your surplus.
I would only play with the surplus. And it's interesting because now I kind of do that with bigger numbers, but it's kind of the same thing. A lot of times I'll invest in a startup that I like or don't like, you know, like sometimes you're not
too sure about it.
You're not too sure, but I'm like, you know what? It's worth this many thousands of dollars for me to help them because I like them and
yeah.
I'm willing to lose it for the sake of whatever I'm getting out of it.
Seeing the success.
Them or whatever, yeah. So I kind of is the same sort of philosophy now with just bigger numbers.
Wow. No, I love it. I love it. And I think that's a great tip. I think if you're not willing to spend, if you're not willing to lose a certain amount of money, you shouldn't. Like, if you're thinking, should I really spend this much money on this? You shouldn't do it. And that's a good rule of law to, like, only spend the things that you earn and that you can just throw away out of the window and still have a normal life and continue your lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's great advice. I really like that. So now we spoke about that. I think we can move on a little bit towards now what's,
mm-hmm.
like, bigger investments, like in startups. We have a few people that are in startups in our audience. So I think what would you say... Like right now, how do you see overall the investment of startups? Like overall, how do you see the ecosystem going? And what tips would you have, like starting tips for small startups, especially here in Puerto Rico? What tips would you give them?
Yeah, so I'll focus on Puerto Rico because it's just like the whole world. There's different things going on.
Yeah.
But in terms of what I see happening here, it's just growing phenomenally, right? When
okay.
I started coming here 3.5-4 years ago, Parallel 18 was just getting going,
yeah.
And we Piloto, I don't even think had opened their old San Juan office yet, and so we have the oncomings of one accelerator program, and now we've got Parallel 18's in their eighth generation, and Guayacan's been around for a long time, but now they're doing a lot more startup stuff, and Piloto's opening their fourth.
Yeah.
Fourth location. And
now you're here with your VC firm.
It's really, really growing. And I just see it bubbling up. And that was one of the things that was super exciting for
okay.
me when I came down.
And do you see that bubbling up as a good thing? Because I say it because sometimes in investment, especially, there's this bubble connotation has a very negative.
Yeah, this is bubble. This is not bubble as in like a bubble that's growing is going to pop. This is bubble like
as
we're
rising up.
So this is the analogy I like to use,
okay.
right? So when I first came here, it was like someone had spent the last 10 or 15 years filling the pot of water and stuck
yeah.
it on the stove. So you knew a lot of work had been done because there was this great pot of water sitting on the stove. But if you looked in it, you didn't know if it was going to boil or not. Now it's heating up. And you know when the bubbles start to form on the bottom
right,
of the pot?
Yep.
I think that's where we are in Puerto Rico. So you know that unless something major happens and someone comes pulls the pot off, it's
yeah.
going to boil.
It's already,
it's
the building blocks are there.
It's going to boil. And I think this is the most exciting time anyone who's interested in venture or startups could
in
possibly come. Because you're at the beginning and it is about to just take off. Crazy. Yeah, so this is an exciting time.
Amazing.
By the way, did you start investing in startup when you came to Puerto Rico, or were you already doing it somewhere else?
Yeah, so I started investing in I was an LP, which is a limited partner in an early stage venture capital fund right out of college. So that's what I did with everything that I earned in the stock market as I went into a venture capital fund.
Better than the latest iPhone.
Yeah, it was definitely better than the latest iPhone because the internet was just starting to take off. So it was...
Oh, wow, even better.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good move. And then I started really getting involved with startups in like, I don't know, 2014, 2015. I had my own software company that I was running. And then toward the last few years of that, I started doing a lot more advising and investing as an angel. Mm. And that's where I really started loving working with early stage startups and knew I wanted to do that full time. And so eventually sold my company and did that. So I sold my company in 2016. Okay. And by that time, it's like not sexy at all. It was back-end software for retailers and wholesale.
Huge market though.
Yeah. And so for manufacturers and brands, we monitored their products. It was all big data play, right? So it was all algorithms and big data.
And that was kind of the stepping stone for you starting your own VC and all that.
Yeah. Well, so what happened was I sold that company and then I knew I wanted to cross over into venture capital. And some friends and things had said, oh, you should start a fund. And I said, there's no way in hell I'm starting a venture capital fund. It's a pain to do. You have to raise the money, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Then when I came down to Puerto Rico right around the same time, it was Gen 1.
In parallel. Yeah.
And I was already doing angel investing. They had invited me down as an angel investor. And then eventually I decided to move here. And when I decided to move, I was like, okay, I have to contribute somehow. So let me do this fund. Mm. So we started the fund. It's a really tiny fund, this particular one.
Okay.
In terms of the base fund, and then there's a lot of add-on stuff. So ATO Ventures is only a $3 million fund in terms of this particular fund, but then we've got additional funds that
that you can like kind of scale.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Match them and figure out what funds match the startup.
Well, yeah, it's such a confusing way that venture capital funds are structured, but the management company has multiple funds. So the fund that we're doing right now to focus on sort of this market validation piece is the second one that we're doing, and it's a tiny fund, and then we've had other funds that you tack on. So assets under management are way higher than like the one fund. Mm. So that's a whole nother podcast.
Okay. Yeah. Part two coming soon.
Yeah, it really is like
season 4.
Season 5.
More information than most people care to know.
Right. Okay, cool. So I want to get back to a little bit. And by the way, thank you for telling that. I think stories are amazing ways that we learn how things came to be. So kind of like learning how you came to be at this point is really interesting because then it gives you an idea of how to invest and how to make the moves to get to the point where you can have enough capital to invest in startups and all these things that have a good return or a big return, at least exponentially. So I guess the last thing I want to ask before going to the what would you do segment is those tips that you would tell startups here in Puerto Rico that are trying to grow. Mm-hmm. What things would you tell them? Should they look for funding right away? Or what would be like the gateway to get to the funding if they need it eventually?
Yeah, so I think the two things. One is know what funding you need in terms of the type. And a lot of times, and we have this issue in Silicon Valley as well, where we're really teaching startups that there's one path, right? You do friends and family, then you do angel, then you do venture. And their venture capital path really doesn't make sense for about 95% of startups. Mm. It just doesn't make sense at all.
Okay.
And so understanding that there are more ways to get funding and support for your company than just venture capital is really important. And most of the time, those other ways make more sense for your business model. So that's one thing. And then the other thing I would just say, and if you've taken a look at ATO Ventures at all and you've seen our site, you know that we are big on market validation. That's our entire strategy. Mm. And it ought to be everyone's strategy because it doesn't make any sense to launch a product into a market that hasn't been validated. And by validated, we mean you have paying customers. So I would say before you ever even think about getting funding and before you even decide to completely build a product or launch, Yeah. Make sure there's a market for your product. And there are a lot of ways that you can do that to test it. But there ought to be people begging you by putting down their credit card.
Or literally paying.
For your product. And so if you do that, what's great is you can extend your runway. Because now you've got revenue. And once you have revenue, then obviously you can go longer without funding, but also if you need funding, it's easier to get. And it's funny because, you know, startups always want to say, or startup founders always want to say, you know, well, how can I launch a product if I don't have funding? That, you know, the investors always want me to have traction.
Yeah, it's not like a cash 22 thing, right?
But this is the thing that they don't understand, and that is, even if you haven't sold the actual product, you can validate the market. And by validating the market, you then can show like the proxy for traction, if not traction.
Yeah, like sign up forms, interviews, all those things that we like dismiss because they sound so basic and so obvious that we kind of like look over them and not really do them.
Right.
And I was recently through Grupo Guayacana as a mentor, and that's what all they said. Like, people were like, oh, how can I like create a product if I don't have money and validate it? Ask people if they like the product, if they're willing to buy it.
Yep.
Put a form up, put a landing page up. Anyone can do it, literally, anybody.
Yep.
So I think that's a huge realization that all entrepreneurs, once you get to that point and realize that, it's like the door's open.
So you know what the biggest issue is, though?
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs don't really want to know. Right? You're afraid that people aren't going to do it. Right? So you say you want to know that it's valid, but you don't really want to know that people hate it.
You're kind of scared.
They're afraid because what happens is if you put it out and no one pays for it, you've proven that there's no market.
Yeah, right.
And then you're not going to get funding. And they're like, well, if I prove there's no market, I'm not going to get funding. So they'd rather try to convince someone to give them money and then force it into the market. But it's never going to work.
And if people aren't
willing to put their credit card down because you're solving a pain point that's big enough, even before the product is completed, then there's not a big enough market or a market that really needs it so much. And then you always get the feedback, oh, well, you know, Apple just shoved things down people's throats.
Which is not true.
Well, it actually is. You know, they're like, so, we're going to tell you what you need. And if we had asked you, then you wouldn't have told us what you need.
Yeah.
But that's the amount of marketing dollars that they, I mean, it took them a long time to get to that point.
And behind that, there's, I mean, I agree with you that they kind of like had to make a jump into guessing what the customer wanted. It's like the thing of when people are riding horses, they didn't know they needed a car until you gave it to them. So I agree to that, but I'm sure they had design thinking and they had other infrastructures inside the R&D process, which led to that conclusion that this is something that we could build and people will want.
Right.
So just having that embedded into the system, I think even if it's not directly like knowing exactly that the customer wants it 100%, it's having enough, just enough, at least 51%, you know, like statistically have that insurance. The last thing I want to do before, and I want to add was that I think another thing that startups do a lot is that they're product focused. And it was it's exactly what you were mentioning about people having their baby and building a product and then going out. And I think the process should be, on the other hand, you going out first, seeing what people need, and then build a product.
Yeah.
Like know what things you're good at, know what you can build, what your team is capable of, and go out there, listen, and then see how you can put the pieces together to build something.
Exactly. And even better is if you're solving a problem you had.
Yes.
Right. So if you were your own customer, that's what we like to see. We always ask if you do your submission on ATU Ventures, there's a submission form.
Now you know.
There's a submission form. Don't lie. We'll figure it out. But we do ask how you came up with the idea. And there's sort of a hierarchy that makes sense. And one is, you know, we built a product. We thought it was cool. And we're going to go out and see if there's a market for it. And then at the other end of this spectrum is I was my customer. In other words, I had this problem and I was annoyed as heck by it. So I decided to fix it. And I figured there are other people like me. If I'm having this problem, other people have it as well. And then in the middle is exactly what you said, which is like, let's go figure out a problem to solve and ask people what needs to be solved. But the worst by far is to just build a product. And we see it a lot, right?
Yeah.
Those of us who like to
tinker. How much would you say? How much would be the statistics like? 60%?
Oh, gosh. Well,
90%?
Of what I see, it's about literally about half. What do you say, Nadia, that we see people that are... And the reason is because we deal with a lot of scientists.
Yeah.
And because we do with tech.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so, you know, people like to invent. And that's what they're... You know, they're PhD students that invent. Mm. And so they invent really great stuff that ought to have a market. Like, this ought to be a great thing. Mm. But if no one buys it, there's no market. Like, it right. doesn't matter. It doesn't matter true, that yeah. it should have a market. There's a yeah. lot of times where people will come up with something. And I'm like, I agree. That ought to be really awesome. But people aren't buying it.
Exactly.
So therefore, it doesn't matter how great it is, right? So a lot of times that's timing. And another thing is the cost and price, right? So you can invent something, but it's too expensive to make. The customers aren't willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to understand that customers aren't necessarily rational thinkers in terms of what you...
Yeah, maybe they don't see as much value as you see it on the price.
Exactly, exactly. And that's hard for people. I mean, I like to create and build too. Like, yeah. you give me a pile of Legos and I'll build all day. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to make something anyone else appreciates enough to pay for.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree. Well, awesome. So I think that was an amazing open conversation about investment in general. So now let's go to the segment of what would you do? Do you want to do the...
Do
you have a little thing about... We just do...
What would you do?
Right.
All right.
So
literally, what would I do?
So, yes.
Or what would I tell you to do? Because that might be two different things.
I think at this point, I think it should be like, let's start with what would you do personally, and then what would you tell us?
Okay.
Right. All right. So the first question is, if you had $1,000, just $1,000 in your bank account.
And no, just $1,000.
Just $1,000. Like college student level, average college student here in Puerto Rico. What would you do with that money? Would you invest it? Obviously, you have living expenses, but if you had it as a segue, if you could invest that money somewhere.
So if I had an extra $1,000.
Right, an extra $1,000. I think that's
right. And only $1,000.
Yes.
Only
$1,000. So what would you do there? And I know you have that conservative mindset, but it would be interesting to see what would you do in that.
Well, yes. So if you pick different points of time in my life, like I said, I would do different things.
Okay.
And... now, what do I do? So I would find the fastest way that I could multiply that money.
Okay.
So, and this is true like at any age. So if I had $1,000, the easiest, fastest way to multiply, it might be go buy the ingredients to make chocolate chip cookies and stand on the corner and sell the best darn chocolate chip cookies.
In the whole block.
And piping hot for $5 a piece, whatever. Mm-hmm. I would find a recipe that's like no one else has, right? And go do that and sell it and make $2,000. And then I do something else and I try to do that until it doesn't scale anymore, right? Because it doesn't scale very far when I'm just mixing things up.
Yeah.
Then once I double that money, then I would go to something a little bit bigger. So maybe then I'm like, okay, I'm going to not make chocolate chip cookies. I'm going to sign up 5 people on the block where I'm going to do their meal prep for them. Because I already know, because I don't like it. A lot of people want meal prep. And so then I would line that up and then I'd scale that so I get $5,000. So I do as fast as I can to get from 1,000 to 10,000. And then you can start investing for real.
Okay, and...
Interesting.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Right, it's really simple stuff, right? Because people are like, oh, $1,000, she's going to tell me to go into crypto, put some into stock, save the other half, be really... But it's all about, you know, people try to overcomplicate how to make money. You've known since you were a kid how to make money. You had a Kool-Aid stand, right? You know these things. You sold Girl Scout cookies. There's a reason that Girl Scout cookies are like still around.
We literally bought a bag. So I think it was like 2 years ago, like Girl Scout cookies were like less than $3.
Okay.
And today a girl, like literally, like I would say at max, 7 years old. And she was pushing like a sale of $6 per box.
Yeah, they're expensive.
And she sold every single one in the office.
Of course she did.
Entrepreneur.
Of course she
did. And she was like amazing at it. She was like, you know, I have this $5 one, but this one's a lot yummier. So, you know, you should buy this one.
Kind of like that bargaining and selling.
Yeah.
So I love that answer. And I want to, one thing that I juggle with, because I agree with that perspective, but what I juggle with is, should you take priority and focus on opportunities that maybe do not align with your passions and your talents, or should you try and see opportunities that kind of like align with your passions and your talents?
Well, when you only have $1,000, you better do whatever you can to double that.
Okay.
Right?
So it's like, just look at opportunities and see what's up.
do whatever you can to double your money.
Even if you don't like it personally. It's just more about...
Well, I mean, you don't want to be miserable because you're not going to... Like, yeah. If you freaking hate cookies, you're going to be like, you want one of these nasty, disgusting cookies. Like, you've got to pick something that you actually enjoy a little bit, right? Yeah, you're not going to sell it very well.
You know, right. Girl Scouts going around, do you want these pieces of crap?
Right. Yeah, it's probably, they're probably not going to do as well as this is yummy.
Right.
But... so definitely, yeah, pick something you do, but you don't have to love it if you're just trying to get to the next level. Now, if you're talking a career move, or you're talking now I've made my first $100,000 and now I'm going to invest that into a startup or something else, please don't do a startup that you hate, because it will die, because it's a lot
of
hard
work. And you'll waste a lot of money,
You'll waste a lot of money, and it's hard work, and you'll be miserable and complaining, and people are talking a lot about happiness these days and
wellness.
And it's wellness, but it really is true, right? You have to, like, the most important thing is taking care of your mindset. Otherwise, you will drive your company into the ground before it ever takes off, right? Mm. Startup life is like this. So definitely do something you enjoy, but the corollary is not true. That does not mean that you can always monetize your passion, right? Mm. So this is what, and I've been quoted as, and I say often, monetize your passion. And I don't mean take the thing you love and turn it into a business necessarily. What I mean is find a way to love what you're doing, right?
Okay. So it's like the other way around.
Yeah. It gets turned around. So anyway, yes, you have to like what you do, but in the beginning, like just get going.
You just have to sacrifice a little bit of that happiness and maybe that, I love what I'm doing for a short return on that investment. And then when you have enough capital, go for your passion.
And the one thing I will say don't ever sacrifice is sleep. Is sleep and your health and your nutrition. Don't ever sacrifice your health, because you will get nowhere.
That's your engine.
Yeah, if you get sick, if you hit a wall, if you get tired, you're gonna go nowhere. So I always, you'll hear me talk in the future more about being very anti hustle and grind, which goes against the grind in our startup culture. Everyone's like, do it, do it, do it. So I say, hustle, don't grind. And what I mean is you've got to do what I just said. You've got to just kind of get out there and make it work.
Yeah.
But if you're grinding yourself down to the nub, your startup will go nowhere. Like, if you kill yourself, your startup will die.
That's the extreme, but literally.
Right. Yep. Exactly. So never sacrifice your sleep or your health or your fitness. Go to the gym. Eat well. I know there's that meme going around, like, 8 hours of sleep is a third of your life. Mm-hmm. If you're poor, then you don't get to sleep. I'm sorry, but I think that video is baloney, and I can't stand it.
You get me in curse.
It's bull. Exactly. So, I mean, maybe 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours is extreme. But if your body needs 6 to 7 hours of sleep, do it.
Yeah. Right.
Your health is important.
But be
important.
Conscious of it. Yeah.
And your health is important. I promise you, you're going to be 10 times more productive if you take an hour out of the middle of the day to go to the gym and grab a smoothie than if you sit and grind. Everything's going to take longer anyway. You're going to lose time because it's going to take longer. You're going to have more mistakes. It's going to be worse.
Yeah.
So in the end, you're wasting time. So.
Yeah, and this is a little bit of a buzzword, but it's like work smart. Work smart is better than work extremely hard and like grinding.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. So next question. So what would you do? Mm-hmm. And maybe this is something that has happened before. But what would you usually do when you lose a lot of money in an investment, or when an investment goes wrong?
There's nothing you can do. Like,
okay.
I mean, I don't do anything. I just go, well, that sucks, and move on. Right. But I'm also,
so you don't get attached to it. You're like, okay.
No, it's literally, it depends on how much you're doing this, right? If you put all of your money into something and you lost it, that's hard to deal with. Then you like let yourself be mad for a few days and then get over it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, over time, things go up, things go down. You lose a lot of money. You don't, and there's nothing to do about it.
Right.
You lost it. You just kind of go, well, that sucks, and you focus on the ones that work.
Okay. Cool.
Sorry.
Cool.
Maybe not the answer you want.
It's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So the last one is, and I love that you mentioned the wellness factor, because I was going to ask about that.
Oh, good.
Is how do you make time to exercise and take care of yourself with all the things you're doing? right now.
Just make it a priority. You just simply
put it on your calendar.
It is on my calendar. It's blocked. And now I've got the team coming with me. We just make it a priority. We make it part of the culture. And so we get up early. I come and I get up at like 5, right? Mm. So for me, I keep my phone in airplane mode for 2 hours when I get up.
In the morning.
Mm-hmm. For 2 hours in the morning from 5 to 7, it's just me thinking time, right?
Whatever happens.
I'm in alpha mode, right? Your brain is still in that wake up creative zone. And so I use that time for thinking. I don't do anything that requires a lot of energy. I might make my bed. I do the dishes. I meditate. I kind of ponder around. If I get an idea, I scribble it on the board. If you see my house, I literally write on the walls. And so, yeah, I spend 2 hours in the morning just allowing myself to think. And that's when all of the creative ideas come and I keep my phone in airplane mode, because what happens if you don't is this, right? The second you reach for your phone and you lie in the bed, and I used to make this excuse too. I would say, oh, well, I get so much done even before I get out of the bed. It like decreases my stress to know I've gotten half my emails done. Yeah. I checked on my social media. But what you're doing is you're robbing yourself of that time where your brain is still in alpha mode. And that is so important, because that's when you come up with your most creative
and
ideas.
And when you say alpha mode, is when you wake up, your brain is at its highest point of productivity and wokeness, I would say. Or how would you put that?
No, it's actually in its lowest state except for sleep. So you're in that state where you're really calm and yet you're cognizant, right? So it's before you rev up into beta, theta, and then, or come back down to theta, delta when you're sleeping. But it's before you get into that really revved up mode.
Yeah, like just going in the momentum of the day. Yeah, it's when you can actually look things maybe from a third perspective, from a third person point of view.
Well, it just,
take a step back.
You're just, so it's like this. You know when you're in the shower?
Yes.
And you always say, oh, I get my best ideas in the shower.
Yeah.
That's why. Because you're relaxed. Right? Mm. So in the morning and right before you go to bed, there's very few times during the day when you're kind of in that, you're conscious, but you're relaxed. And so I like to take advantage of that in the morning and just give myself time to think. That's when you come up with solutions, where when you're grinding, trying to think of solutions, you can't.
Yeah.
But when you're just like flowing and it's kind of, you're in almost a meditative state. I actually do meditate in the morning.
Yeah.
But you're almost for that whole time in this meditative state. So this goes back to the whole wellness question and how you make time. So one, I just make that a priority. I simply do not turn my phone on for 2 hours.
Yeah, like whatever happens, that time is there. And
yeah,
it's
my
set.
Phone, I go into airplane mode from the time I get into bed to the time 2 hours after I get out of the bed. It's an airplane mode. So you can't reach
me. That's a good tip.
You can ask. You can't reach me. And the world does not stop. People are like, oh, I can't do that because I have a startup or I have kids or I have whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, the world will not stop.
And you have all these things going on and you still take that as a priority.
I take that
so,
as a priority.
Like you can be Elon Musk, whatever. Like Jennifer Hopp. You can be Jennifer Hopp and you still have that priority in terms of like shutting everything down and having time for yourself.
Yeah, and I find that I'm way more productive anyway because I come up with the best solutions to anything that we're working on in those 2 hours in the morning.
Yeah.
And then for the... she's like, yeah, because I'll come into the office at 7:30.
She's like,
and
okay,
I figured
it out.
Exactly.
I'm here just like waking up and she'll get there with all this energy and start like...
It's a little bit like that, yeah. So, but we start the day early. Now, people come in at 7:30, 8:30. I don't specify when people have to come in. We just start, as long as we're overlap a lot of time, a certain chunk of the day. And then by 11 o'clock, we're ready to take a two-hour break. We take a two-hour break and go to the gym. So from 11
to 2 o'clock, interesting.
11, yeah. So from 11 to 1 at 1:30, depending on how long it takes us to get ready, we go to the gym and we work out.
And that's our time where you relax and just forget about everything.
Well,
do you put
it
on airplane mode
again?
It's not so relaxing.
Okay. It's pretty. We have fun, but it's like it's work. So if you watch my stories.
I watched some.
Yeah, we
put them
on.
It's
on hop.vc, H-O-P-P.
Everywhere, Instagram.
Yeah, everywhere, but I only post on Insta.
Okay.
And so, if you watch the stories, we have a lot of fun, but we work. between the laughter,
like
my trainer, we have trainers, and our trainers are like, you know, they capture the fun, but they're also making us push a lot of weight around for an hour and 15 minutes, and then we hop on the cardio, and then we get dressed and come back to the office. And we work until we get done, and then, you know, we go home and work some more or do whatever. But, yeah, we just make it a priority. The short answer to that 20-minute reply is you make it a priority.
Awesome. Beautiful.
Make it a priority, Fowl.
Yeah, I think, I'm very guilty of waking up, and the first thing I do, and I do try to meditate, but the first thing I
like
do
like this?
So, yeah. So
with your phone in your hand?
The thing is that my meditation app is an app. Mm-hmm. So when I open the phone,
that's the trick.
It's an app, and I see everything else besides the app. And then I remember, oh, right, I opened the phone to get to the meditation app.
Right,
so it's usually 20 minutes right there, just snapped off my day.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, so I think putting it on airplane mode, since starting when I go to bed, it's a perfect way to do it, because nothing comes in since I go to bed. So
yeah.
That's awesome. That's a great tip. Cool. So I think that's a good segue to kind of like close it. We're at 40 minutes. And I think it's been a great time having you here.
Yep.
I want to start off with you telling us a little bit more what you're doing right now. If you want to mention something specifically, I know you have that program coming up for local startups. So bombs away.
So Nadia is always telling me, I'll be on stage. And she'll be like, I can't believe you were up there the whole time and you didn't mention the Pigeon Playing Paradise. So I'm so happy that you tossed that softball up, because I would have been in trouble for not mentioning it.
But yeah, for sure.
I wasn't going to let you.
I'm sure. You're going to say it. So what we're doing is, you know, we're such an early stage venture capital fund. We go in before companies have launched. So what that means is most of the time they don't exist.
Yeah.
They certainly aren't an AngelList or TechCrunch. And a lot of times they don't even have a website. And so the only way for people to find out about us is through social media or word of mouth. And so what we're doing is a little bit of a campaign, and we called it PPP, or Pitch and Play in Paradise, or Pitch and Play in Puerto Rico, take your pick. But what it really is we're going to pick two founders from outside of Puerto Rico and two from inside Puerto Rico, and in the spring bring everybody together.
Okay.
And do at least 4 days of meeting and greeting, and we'll pay for everything. If you're on another part of the island, you'll come, but everyone will stay in the same hotel together. We'll have meetings, we'll have lectures, we'll go see the island, we'll have fun, we'll go to Parallel,
like a boot
we'll come
camp.
Here. It'll be a boot camp. We'll start their market validation process if we haven't done that already. The idea is to pick companies that we want to invest in, so you'll likely, we won't promise, but you'll likely get an investment from us, and have, you know, 4 days to really learn about Puerto Rico and what we have to offer here, and, you know, just have fun.
Wonderful.
Meet us in person and
cool.
And experience the island.
How can people search that online?
So just submit to ATO Ventures, just like you normally would for if you're interested in funding. So you just go to atoventures.com. There's a big submit button. And you just fill out a little form that gets you in the queue, and then you'll hear from us, and you go from there. There's a checkbox that says you're interested in the Pitch and Play in Paradise program.
Nice.
So, awesome. So, you know what? Pitch and Play in Paradise.
Or Puerto Rico.
Or Puerto Rico.
Same thing.
Yeah. Pick or choose, whichever you want. Apply. It's a great opportunity. And I've known Jennifer for a while now, and I know she's doing some great work here in the island. So it's definitely a great program to apply for. And as for us, you can find this podcast in Reto Aceptado Podcast at every social media. We have TikTok. By the way, you gotta get on TikTok, Jennifer.
I know, I'm trying to figure out what to do. Maybe we should put some of my little, I usually am dancing around in the office, so maybe we should put those on TikTok.
Yeah, maybe. Literally, that's a good idea. It's all about the music, so TikTok is great for that.
There
so TikTok, we don't have Twitter, but we have Facebook, Instagram. Find us there, follow us there, and personally me, you can find me at Favo Velez PR everywhere, literally everywhere. Even in, I don't know, what's this most obscure dark web? You can find me in the dark web. It's Favo Velez PR.
Be careful where you look for him.
Right.
What about you, Jerry?
And you can find me as Jerry Stories and every platform as well.
All right.
Perfect.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet. And obviously, before closing, we have to thank our sponsors, Coco House, for giving us this beautiful, amazing space. It's Coco House is more than just a co-working space. It's an entity. It's a community. It's a space where entrepreneurs get together and people that are creating get together. They network, they connect, and they build cool stuff. So if you need an office space, if you need a room
in the heart of Santurce.
In the heart of Santurce. If you need a place to meet, if you need to record your podcast, hit them up, cocohousepr.com. and Gamolfi, which is the person who designed our beautiful logo, which you can hit him up at GabrielMorales.9536@gmail.com or his Instagram, Gamolfi.studio. Thank you again. Thank you, Jennifer, for being here. Follow Jennifer, follow us, apply to the program, and we'll see you in the next one.
We'll see you.
Thank you.
Woo! All right. Yay. Amazing. 44 minutes.